Today we'll do the 7th shloka and probably the 8th too. Kuvaratmajo bhata murchai vayatrat. Tvayamochito bhakti bhajo kritocha. Tata prema bhaktim sakam re priyachcha. Namokshe graho mesti dhamo dareha. Om agyana timidandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshan militam yena tasmai shri kudai. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastava Gaura Bhaktavinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. O Lord Damodar, just as the two sons of Kuvera, Manigriva and Nalakuva, were delivered from the curse of Narada and made into great devotees by you, in your form as a baby, tied with rope to a wooden grinding mortar. In the same way, please give to me your own prema bhakti. I only long for this and have no desire for any kind of liberation. What about these two sons of Kuvera? Manigriva, Nalakuvara. As we've discussed before, they became blinded by the opulence and wealth of being the sons of Kuvera. And that opulence maddened them, so much so that they performed degraded activities and couldn't even recognize how degraded they were. Therefore, Narada Muni decided that the best way to treat their disease was to take away all their opulence, even take away their human form, or more specifically, demigod form. Narada Muni explained his rationale. He said that returning opulent persons to a condition of poverty is a good correction for their derangement. Because when you're poor, you automatically perform austerities. Everything is a struggle in an obvious way when you don't have money, so therefore you have to live austerely. Narada Muni also pointed out that when you're poor, your senses will become more under control because you don't have any wealth to engage in wild sense gratification. It's not like that now, of course. Anyone on the social benefit, getting money from the government, you know, will easily spend their whole check on intoxication. But Narada Muni is speaking about a real human society in normal circumstances. And he said that poverty restricts you. Poverty provides you with less options for uncontrolled senses. Poverty enforces an austere life upon you. You have to live simply. And what other advantages of poverty did he bring up? A poor person will more eagerly or more easily give access to a saintly person going door to door, whereas a rich person is very proud. It's like, you know, when you try to do door to door in rich sections, generally, you know, there's a big wall around the house and a video camera and can't even get to the door. Well, Narada Muni, he said that, well, better to be poor then, because the saintly person can immediately come up to you and talk to you. Whereas if you're a rich person, you're barricaded into your own mansion. And you are proud, You're thinking, who are these beggars coming to me? Such nuisances in the world. Why don't they get a job? Well, we have a job. Our job is the greatest job, the greatest welfare work, distributing the highest knowledge, giving the greatest opportunity. That's a job. Narada Muni reasoned that if I put these two boys, Nalakuva and Manigriva, in poverty, that'll be the best thing for them. They're so out of it. They don't even recognize their own degraded condition. They don't care. As we've spoken many times, this is the one of the difficult things about preaching in Kali Yuga, seeing how people do not care for themselves and how they'll put their own self into difficult situations rather than try to control their senses. In this way, Narada Muni reasoned, I'll put them in poverty. I'll put them in the poverty-stricken position of a tree. They'll have nothing, and they'll have to stand in all kinds of weather, and people will take from them. A tree can't defend itself. People take everything from a tree. Bark, leaves, branches, sap, flowers, whatever. They just take from the tree. Take its own skin. That was the curse of Narada Muni. As we pointed out before, Prichit Maharaj was curious about this. King Prichit knows exactly what to be inquisitive about. He said, wait a minute. How could such a great saintly person as Narada Muni have what apparently is a spirit of revenge? Did he want to get back at these two boys who were so brazenly naked in the Mandakini Ganges River and refused to show proper respect to Narada Muni by covering themselves when he came by? Is this Narada Muni governed by revenge? No, it can't be. But he presented this question, and Shukadev Goswami clarified. Yes, Narada Muni cursed them, but the end result of the curse was that these two sons of Kuvera would be trees in Vrindavan, and the Lord would rescue them from their condition. They would personally see the Lord face to face. The first part of this prayer is glorifying that release of Manigriva and Nalakuvara. They were delivered by Lord Damodar. What did Lord Damodar deliver them from? The least important thing is that he delivered them from a curse. Then, more importantly, he delivered them from material existence. Lord Damodar gave them freedom from material existence. But as you know from the previous prayer, Varam Deva Moksha Namoksha Vadim Va, liberation from material existence is considered so insignificant. So what is the real way that Narada Muni delivered the two sons of Kuvera? Kayamuchito bhakti bhajo kitaucha. He gave them bhakti, unflinching devotion to his lotus feet. He gave them that. Remember, this whole Dhammadharastic is not considering liberation from material existence to be very important at all. Therefore, you have to be skillful to spot the real gift of Lord Damodar to the sons of Kuvera. Don't become so caught up in the fact they were trapped in tree bodies and then they were released. That's also extraordinary, no doubt. But the most extraordinary thing is that they were given bhakti, pure bhakti to Lord Krishna. Highlighting that real gift, the prayer is asking, Tata prema bhaktim swakam me priyatsha. You also, Lord Damodar, give me your prema bhakti in the same way. Give me that love of Krishna in the same way that you did for these two boys. If you could do it for them, you can do it for me. As we discussed, ordinarily, Krishna would have nothing to do with these two boys. But because they were graced by Narada Muni in the form of a curse, Krishna agreed to fulfill the words of Narada Muni. This is how important it is to please the devotee of Krishna. That is Krishna's system. Tata prema bhaktam swakame priyachcha namokshe grahomesti damodareha. Again, just so you don't have any doubts, the point is raised. The prayer is saying, I only long for this prema bhakti, this pure love of Krishna. I don't want any kind of liberation. It's the prema bhakti that we're focusing on in the release of Nalakuvara and Manigriva, not their release from material existence. What else can we meditate on in this verse? Lord Damodar is bound to the wooden grinding mortar, yet he's setting free these two sons of Kuvera. One who is bound up is setting others free. That is the amazing paradox. It is not that Lord Damodar is simply bound by the rope. He's bound by his mother's love. And he's giving opportunity for that highest love to Nalakuvara and Manigriva. From the material point of view, this doesn't make sense. How can the bound set anyone free? You should think about that point when you choose your friends and associates in the material world. How can those who are conditioned help you? Therefore, we urge that when devotees take up the process of Krishna consciousness, they should first get themselves together. Learn how to take the shackles off. That's your first responsibility to yourself. Then you can think about responsibility to others. First, you show that you know how to get the shackles off of you. You can unchain yourself. Otherwise, what is the use? You can't unchain yourself. What good can you do for yourself or anyone? This prayer is expressing the longing of the devotee. Please give me that prema bhakti. You gave it to those two sons of Kuvera. Please give it to me. I don't want anything else, not even liberation. I'm meditating on this form of you bound with a rope around your belly. The rope's attached to these grinding mortars, and you knock these trees down and you set Nalakuvara and Manigriva free. The main way you set them free was by giving them your prema bhakti. You said that their eyes will always see the form of devotees, their hands and legs will always be engaged in your service, their ears will always hear your glories, their tongue will always chant your glories, their mind will always think of your pastimes, and that they'll never fall from the platform of bhakti. Give that to me, please. That is the longing of this prayer. Then the next verse, the last one. Namaste stu dhamne buddha deep di dhamne. Twadiyodarayata vishvasya dhamne. Namo radhikaya twadiya priyaya. Namo nantalilaya devaya tubhyam. O Lord Damodar, I first of all offer my obeisances to the brilliantly effulgent rope which binds your belly. I then offer my obeisances to your belly, which is the abode of the entire universe. I humbly bow down to your most beloved Srimati Radharani, and I offer all obeisances to you, the Supreme Lord, who displays unlimited pastimes. This last prayer is bringing various elements to a close and tying the knot on the package, tying the knot on the Damodarastika gift package. Like you have a ribbon and you make a bow. Anyone knows how to do that? You make a gift with a nice bow on it. You know how to do that? Very artistic. So that's what this prayer is doing in the eighth shloka. Completing the gift package with a beautiful bow. Bringing all the elements together. O Lord Damodar, number one, I'll offer my obeisances to the brilliantly effulgent rope which binds your belly. Anything in connection to Krishna is special. Not that we worship any rope. It's not that you're going to go around offering obeisances to all the ropes, you see. But this particular rope, used by Krishna's dear devotee to bind the Lord, that rope is worshipable. It's called Mahapasha, the great rope. Things in relation to Krishna have their special value. Therefore, they're referred to in special ways in Sanskrit. Mahapasha, that rope, that super rope. Because it went around the belly of the Lord, who has no beginning or end, inside or outside, who's immeasurable. Still, Mother Yashoda was able to get the rope around the Lord's belly when he agreed to be conquered by her love. The amazing thing about Krishna is that although he is immeasurable and no beginning and end, inside or outside, still he has his human-like form so that the devotees can reciprocate with him. Krishna does everything to be lovable. That's what your heart desires, a person who does everything to be lovable. Krishna does that unlimitedly. He knows just how to act as the perfect child to fill his parents and the elderly people of Vrindavan with parental love, vatsalya rasa. There are certain things that stimulate the various relationships with Krishna. For those in parental love of Krishna, vatsalya rasa, there are various features and aspects of Krishna that set off their parental love. Krishna's childhood form, his sweet words, his submissiveness, respect to elder persons, his charity, his shyness, his humility. In other words, don't think that Krishna as a child simply steals and is mischief, makes mischief. No, that's one side of him. He also is so humble and respectful to elders. And even as a child, very charitable and shy. That's also there. and that stimulates the parental love of the elders. The way his childhood body looks, the way his childhood body is dressed. Nectar Devotion describes how child Krishna was walking down a street in Vrindavan, and Mother Yashoda saw him, and immediately her breasts emanated with milk, wetting her sari, because she was provoked. Her parental love was provoked, stimulated. Both Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj would inspire each other in their parental attachment for Krishna. Krishna, as he became a little older, would start taking care of calves right around the house. Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda. And then as he got a little bit older, he would take care of those calves near the forest, not in the forest. At that time, his father, Nanda Maharaj, would go up to a special part of the house, like a lookout post on top of the house, and he would watch for his child Krishna returning. And then he would tell Mother Yashoda, "Yes, I'm seeing him. Just see how beautiful our child looks." And he would describe child Krishna. And then Mother Yashoda would respond also, "Yes, yes. Just see his beauty. Just see how he's doing this, how he's doing that." And this way they would inspire one another and churn the ocean of their parental love for Krishna. Also, when they're feeling acute separation from Krishna, they would sometimes, just like you know in the material world, ladies can get on their husband's case, and the man, you know, feels very defensive. That goes on in the spiritual world in a perfect, pure way. Overwhelmed by separation from Krishna, when Krishna's in Mathura, Mother Yashoda sometimes just berates Nanda Maharaj. "What kind of man are you? Have you no shame? Krishna's not here. Krishna's gone. And you're not doing anything about it?" So you see that kind of behavior has its origin in the spiritual world. "How can you just stand there? Krishna's not here. Do something about it." Mother Yashoda's feelings of separation from Krishna would put her into transcendental illusion. And what would Nanda Maharaj reply? "Calm down, woman. Why are you disturbing my whole house? Just calm down. Don't be a, you know, don't turn the place upside down. Don't you see your Krishna's right here?" In this way, he was also affected by separation from Krishna. They were both feeling such separation from Krishna while Krishna was in Mathura that these things were going on. Nanda Maharaj would assert, "He's right here, don't you see him?" And Mother Yashoda would be berating him, "How can you just act normal when Krishna's not here?" This way, life in their house would go on. Reports would get back to Krishna when he was away in Mathura, in Dwarka. One devotee said to him, "You know that stick you used when you were herding cows back when you were in Vrindavan? That stick is now lying in a corner in the house of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, your old house. And just like that stick is lying motionless in the corner, Similarly, Mother Yasoda is as still and motionless as that stick, feeling separation from you. Parental love of Krishna, Vatsalya Rasa, means you think you're Krishna's superior and he depends on you for his maintenance and his protection. This is how the elders who have that relationship with Krishna think. Not only Krishna's parents, but also the elders of Vrindavan, Krishna's teacher, Sanjipani Muni, they all have this Vatsalya Rasa. Krishna depends on me. I have to protect him. I have to train him. I have to take care of him. Of all the persons in Vatsalya Rasa, Mother Yashoda is the most intimate. And then Nanda Maharaj. There are other persons we read about in the scriptures who have parental love of Krishna. Of course, Vasudev and Devaki. The mothers in Krishna's life always come ahead of the men. They rank higher on the list of intimacy. Because they get to nurse Krishna and dress him and raise him, and their maternal affection brings them closer. Mother Yasoda never thinks Krishna is God. Nectar Devotion tells us how Mother Yasoda would speak to the people of Vrindavan, explaining Krishna's extraordinary activities. She'd say, okay, our baby Krishna was rescued from the Putana Rakshasi, the witch Putana. How did that happen? It only happened because Nanda Maharaj and I prayed to the Lord for his safety. That's how it all happened. And how was it that those Yamala Arjun trees crashed down? It was simply because of a strong wind. What about Govardhan Hill? It seems like Krishna and Balaram lifted Govardhan Hill, but we know that Krishna can't do that. I'm sure it was Nanda Maharaj who held it. She's blinded by her parental love. She cannot accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that vision overwhelms her. So much so that even though she saw Krishna lift Govardhan Hill, she can't accept it. Oh, Nanda Maharaj must have done it somehow. The Yamala Arjun trees, obviously a strong wind knocked them down. There's no doubt about it. This is how her maternal affection blinds her. During this month of Kartik, we meditate on Mother Yasoda and her parental love of Krishna. She was able to get that rope around Krishna, from whose belly the whole universe comes. Krishna in his form as Garbhadakshai Vishnu, expansion of expansion of expansion of expansion. We discussed how from his navel comes the lotus flower, containing all the ingredients of the cosmos, containing all the planetary systems, and then Brahma takes those raw materials and arranges them in a structure of the universe. That belly in the original Swayam Bhagavan, Personality of Godhead, Mother Yasoda got a rope around that belly. That rope is so special that it's considered to be the origin of the Brahma Jyoti, brilliantly effulgent rope. First you offer your obeisances to the rope, then you offer your obeisances to the belly, And then, Namo Radhikayai Twadiya Priyayai. I humbly bow down to your most beloved Srimati Radharani. We mentioned how in a previous prayer there's a confidential mention of Srimati Radharani. Vritam kuntalai snigda raktaischa gopya muhuschim vitam bimbaraktadanam me. The cheeks of the Lord, circled by locks of soft black hair tinged with red, those cheeks are kissed again and again by a gopi. One meaning is the gopi Yashoda, but the hidden meaning is the gopi Srimati Radharani. Now in the last verse, Srimati Radharani's name is mentioned. Namo Radhikayai Twadiya Priyayai. In other words, although this prayer is centering on the Baal Leela of the Lord, the parental love exchanged, still the prayer is taking place in Vrindavan, and Srimati Radharani is the actual queen of Vrindavan. Vrindavan is free. And so you, in this prayer, it's ending very sweetly, as is the Sanskrit style, by mentioning Srimati Radharani's name. No one is more beloved to Krishna than Srimati Radharani. As we mentioned before, actually, you perform the Kartika Vrata or vow to please Srimati Radharani. She's known as Urjeshwari. Now we have our Urjeshwari Devi Dasi. Srimati Radharani is the queen of the controller of the Urja Vrata, the Damodar or Kartik month vow. The Shastra instructs that you worship Srimati Radharani by performing these Kartik activities. And here in the last verse of the Damodarastic prayers, Srimati Radharani's name emerges. Oh, there are hints in the preceding verse. Now it comes out. Namo Radhikaya Twadiya Priyayai. And in the last line, it becomes confidential again. Namo Nanta Lilaya Devaya Tubhyam. I offer all obeisances to you, the Supreme Lord, who displays unlimited pastimes. Sanatan Goswami, in commenting on these prayers, says that this is a confidential reference to Krishna's intimate leelas, particularly Rasa Leela. Because you're not supposed to discuss these things in public amongst a general audience. Therefore, the author of the prayer makes a veiled reference to Krishna's Madhurya Ras, his conjugal loving affairs. Namo Nanta Lilaya Devaya Tubhyam. It seems generic. I offer my obeisances to the Lord who displays unlimited pastimes, nothing in particular. But the hidden meaning is the Rasa Lila of the Lord. Sanatana Goswami explains that the word Lila, in its confidential understanding, can be divided as into two parts. Li meaning embrace and La giving. So in Krishna's Rasa Lila, he's giving embraces. That is the hidden meaning of the ending of this prayer. In this way, the author of the prayer is protecting Krishna's confidential pastimes, while at the same time glorifying them for those who know. Tomorrow is the last day of Kartik. Every year, you'll look forward to singing these prayers. You'll feel separation from them. Everything in the life of a devotee is meant to provoke your attraction for Krishna, so that gradually your attraction for the material world becomes diminished. Our problem is attraction to the material world. We think there's hope for us. We think we're going to find a place somewhere in this world for us. It's not going to happen. The sooner we realize that we must learn how to be satisfied with Krishna, hearing about Krishna, talking about Krishna, remembering Krishna, the more peaceful we'll be. To attain that state, we require purification. The intelligent person realizes, I need purification. I'm just not seeing things the way they are. My senses aren't working in their proper way right now. So let me not jump to conclusions and put myself in so many situations. Let me first clean myself off, and then I'll be able to see what is what. My senses will start to act naturally. Life after life, I've been in a berserk condition. Now let me settle down and reform myself, revive my attraction for Krishna. I can tell you for a fact, the process of bhakti yoga works. All those things you read about in the shastra, they can be yours, but you have to have a lifetime commitment. Patience, enthusiasm, determination, Rupa Goswami says, utsaha nishchaya darya. If you actually stick to the regular principles and trying to chant the holy name and being engaged in Krishna's service through thick and thin, and I know it's not always easy. Sometimes you're tired, sometimes you're sick, sometimes you feel unappreciated, sometimes you are misunderstood. Sometimes because not all devotees are acting properly all the time, you may be mistreated. You were never mistreated in the material world. Because the association of devotees is like a hospital where patients have gathered together for the purpose of taking their medicine. There's always some patients who don't take the medicine thoroughly, or in some way cause a commotion that has to be expected. Not everybody in the hospital is going to follow the doctor's orders. Or they may start out following and then change. So don't be artificially utopian. Understand, you're in a hospital. Be glad you're in the hospital. Take your medicine. Be practical and realistic, understanding some patients aren't as attentive as other patients. But if you stay in the hospital through thick and thin, you'll be cured.